and welcome once again to Crazy Comics and Stories. It's me, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rat Bastard, and at the other end of the series of tubes and wires that we call the internets is Joe Crazy Rider. How you doing today, Joe?
I'm going to turn it all. Whoa! Damn it. So much for the hokey pokey. Well, I'll give that up for a while.
You should give up the hokey pokey. It turns the world around.
I know. I just wanted to be part of a group. It's so lonely sitting here in the room waiting for you to call me back so we can commence this podcast.
Well, it's like I think about a year ago when I finally admitted I'd never been to Waldrug. I just told people that so they'd think I was cool.
Yeah, the jury's still out whether we think you're cool or not, but we'll probably let you hang with us.
Well, that's good. Not that I have time to hang with anybody.
Not that we want to see any more of your high school pictures online, pray tell.
There was just one.
That was hideous. Hideous. And the only thing that would have been more hideous, had I posted mine. I look like a fat little cherub. Seriously, my freshman year photo, I mean, first of all, before I had my haircut, because I went to from one parochial school to another, I had the atypical 80s, is he a girl or is he not hairstyle. You know, my hair was long. It was like over my ears. It was it's like my dad when he used to watch Eight Is Enough, the little kid. I think that son of a bitch, I'd cut his hair. What kind of punk is that? And so I had that. But then when you went to this parochial school, you had to have it cut so it wasn't shoulder length, and you had to up and around the ear. And, oh, that's when I discovered my hair was curly. It went from, like, just straight to curly and was, oh, my God, it was out of control for, like, 4 years. And now it's just gone. But, yeah, I mean, I was back. I had chubby cheeks. I was like, oh, I look at this thing, and I'm like, oh, my God. I used to tease my old partner, Pat, that he looked like a human Cabbage Patch doll. But, man, my freshman photo was ugly. And then my sophomore photo was even worse. But it had more. I had more of a mullet going.
Well, it was the 80s.
It was. And it was a transition phase. Maybe I'll line all those pictures up just for the hell of it.
By the way, I have a complaint.
Hang on a second. Let's see. Responding to, giving of, outside of Festivus. Oh, how about that? In our contract, it says you're allowed to have 2 complaints a year outside of the Festivus show. So go ahead. If you want to burn one this early in the year, let's go for it.
I am, because David Letterman has announced his new TV show.
Uh-oh.
Have you heard about it?
I have been off TV forever.
He is going to be doing a monthly show on Netflix called My Next Guest Needs No Introduction with David Letterman.
That sounds like an old Groucho Marx show.
But it's just going to be him sitting down with a guest for an hour or so and just chatting. And Joe, his first guest is Barack Obama.
Oh, yeah, as if he needs no introduction.
Once again, we get screwed over. And Barack Obama refuses to show up on this here podcast. Now, I have tweeted at him. I have sent him an email. I sent him a physical letter on actual paper written with my actual hand and an actual pen.
Actually?
Actually, saying we would love to have him on the show to talk about the 70s comics that he enjoyed, because we know through interviews. He was a fan of Conan the Barbarian and The Amazing Spider-Man. And I even said, we'll talk about whatever you want. You talk about your library. You can talk about your foundation. You can talk about how you don't have to wear a tie anymore if you don't want to. We can talk about how you look cool in a tan suit.
How hot his wife was. Yes. Ooh.
But nope. Once again, he passes this show over. And Joe, we are a national treasure. He passes this show over for some other has-been.
I know why.
Why?
Remember when you shaved your beard back in last year?
Yeah, but it's all grown back.
Too late. Letterman never shaved his beard. It's all about the beard, baby.
I have a full beard now. I don't just have the goatee that I've had for 20-some years. I have a full beard.
Yeah, you blew it. Letterman's way ahead of you in the beard department. Always shall be, always will be.
He does look like George Bernard Shaw now. I think soon he's going to be one of the Smith brothers on the cough drops. But once again, we would talk to Barack Obama about Conan, whether he prefers Barry Windsor Smith, Gil Kane, or John Buscema. So, Joe, who do you prefer on your Conan?
Tough choice. I would say Buscema, just because I read more with him.
I think Buscema captured Conan himself better. It was also Buscema always tried to do his best work on Conan because it wasn't superheroes and there weren't cars and there weren't buildings and there weren't street signs. And he liked drawing horses and beautiful women and the human figure. You know, he's another of the Brune Hogarth guys who likes to draw the human figure rather than, cars.
Well, the question I have is, why Marvel gave up the license for Conan?
What it was, they thought that they had it in perpetuity.
Mm-hmm.
And the sales on Conan had dropped to the point where they were just doing miniseries. And through an editorial changeover, the new editor the old editor was let go. And no one told the new editors that, hey, you have to put out a comic every month.
Hmm.
And because they did not put out enough comics in a year, the license was up for grabs and Dark Horse grabbed it. Now, I've noticed that Dark Horse now, they do not have a regular Conan comic either, but they're putting out the Conan omnibuses.
And
over at Dark Horse, the omnibuses are these $25 trade paperbacks that are about 400 pages.
Yep.
They're putting out one of those a month.
Well, that brings up an interesting question. Must there be a Marvel Comics? And, of course, I'm taking this off a post by Adam Frey in Comics and Comic News. And I think you can go to popcultureuncovered.com and read the whole thing. But he brings up an interesting point around the question, must there be a Marvel Comics? Now, it's not a Marvel Sucks post. It's not about comic shops. It's not about you or me, whether we like it or not. He just says, has Marvel as a comic book company outlived its purpose? He says, two things are going on with Marvel right now. Its popularity is way up, but its comic sales are way down. The mass market appeal is explainable. The movies, they've been going pretty strong. If you look back to the history of X-Men and Spider-Man films, even longer. The film success has not really translated in the comic sales. And that's always been a phenomenon you and I have talked about. I mean, they talked even as Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 came out this year, the physical comic series tanked. And people are not beating down the door for more Thor or Spider-Man comics, which doesn't help that Marvel isn't really producing a lot that's new lately. You know, it used to be in the forefront of creativity, massive numbers between 61 and 90. Most of them are the major films now. Meanwhile, Marvel there's been some successes. I mean, and, you know, this brings up a question I'll throw to you, Corey. Can you name an original character since Deadpool has been a runaway success?
It depends on what you mean by an original character who's a huge success.
Yeah, I would discount derivative characters. I say Adam did on the thing. So he dismissed Kamala because he's the new Miss Marvel, because he said it wouldn't have existed without Carol Danvers and Miles Morales.
No, I strongly disagree. Peter Parker. I strongly disagree. The Ms. Marvel, the name was sitting out there, and somebody did a pitch for a character. If the Ms. Marvel name wasn't sitting out there, they would have picked another name.
Okay, so we could say that, but I mean, original. So a name doesn't necessarily mean derivative for you.
No.
Okay.
Another thing that I would point out that a lot of people in comic punditry don't seem to understand is it's a poor idea to give your new character to Marvel.
Well, there's that. And Marvel's also spinning their wheels with events. So anyways, Adam comes up with a radical solution. He says Marvel as a company has outgrown comic books. They've gone mainstream. Its character have a hit enough of a cultural watershed that they can now stand toe to toe with something like Star Wars, both in terms of recognition and profitability, their household names, which is true. Cause back when I had Hot Comics, the idea that and that was in the 90s, half the stuff that's out there now. I mean, it amazes me as I walk down the aisle and I see Spider-Man cups, I see T-shirts, I see coloring books. I mean, I'd have given my teeth to have these things when I had Hot Comics. So the question is, why bother with a comic division? The money's in the movies, the television shows, the merchandising. He goes on to say Marvel doesn't seem to know how to do Marvel anymore. They've kind of lost their creativity. They're trying to ride the current trends of the movies. You see it sometimes. They've kind of adapted Hawkeye to the movie Hawkeye and things like that. Does Disney need Marvel Comics if Marvel is the franchise?
Well, I'm going to point out a couple of things that that this article did not take into account. First off, he is just looking at the sales in comic shops.
Well, that's all we know. And that's right. The only place where comics are sold. He's not taking in graphic novels.
He's not taking in trade paperbacks. He's not taking in Scholastic. He's not taking in the mass market. He's not taking in the international sales.
Also taking in the point that Marvel's not even publishing Mickey Mouse comics.
No.
And that's something that I thought was interesting because, you know, Disney and Marvel learned a sharp lesson when they thought they were going to control the flow. I mean, Marvel they went crazy. They bought Toy Biz. They bought Panini. They bought Skybox. They figured, you know, we're going to make this stuff and sell it ourselves and keep the revenue streams. When they made them, and Disney did that too with the retail stores that they had for a while all over America. And what they found out was, no, it doesn't pay to own a toy company because then you have to pay to manufacture and design the toys. Where the money is in the licensing, which is what Disney loves to do. That's why you see, you know, IDW is publishing two Star Wars series aimed at the younger set that Marvel is not doing. That's why Mickey Mouse is being published somewhere else, because Disney loves that franchise fee, because it basically comes with no strings, because they don't have to make the bloody thing. And I imagine they probably get a piece of the action. So like what we were talking about earlier in Conan, if you either stop or the sales drop to a certain, we'll get it back and give it to somebody else. And that's like, Disney's never really done their own comic. They did for a while.
Yeah, they had their own publishing arm for a while, and they were about to do adult comics when and it was late 80s, early 90s. And when the investor boom took off, it passed Disney by because Disney wasn't a brand that sold in comic stores. However, there was Disney Comics that sold frighteningly well. And that was the Disney Digest magazine that for most of the 90s, was the highest selling comic book there is. Period. Yeah. End of statement.
Jeff Smith
got bone into that, and it gave him enough money that he never has to worry about working ever again.
But they also went out and bought the prime rack right at every grocery store and Target and Walmart. So they actually product placed that. So there was some money behind this. It wasn't just, okay, here's a Red Wolf title, let's see what happens.
Yeah.
You know, there was actually some planning behind that. And that's something Disney's pretty good at, too. That's why you see, walking through Target, they have a big end cap with a talking Star Wars thing on it that activates as you walk by. Target didn't do that out of the goodness of their hearts. Disney coughed up a little bit of money. They said, we want this end cap, and we're going to keep it during the movie. And then you changed it out when Guardians was there, and you changed it out when Thor, and then you changed it out when Spider-Man. So, and that's something comic shops never really got the hang of. I know they toyed with that back when I had Hot Comics. The idea, and the sticking point was, and this was part of the bullheadedness of comic shops, is that, well, we'll pay you to have an end cap or a predominant display of Marvel Comics. We will tell you what to put there and when to put it there. We want to know how this stuff sells. And right away, everybody was like, whoa, I'm not giving my sales data to Marvel. Well, they'll just turn around and Marvel Mart me. And Marvel Mart, of course, was in my view, again, I think comic retailers way overreacted, but was a giveaway given out where it says, you know, Peter Parker was out and something happened in a comic store. He said, whoa, comic shops are too dangerous. I'm going to order my stuff online or whatever the hell it was.
Yeah, it was buying it from an 800 number.
And a lot of it was exclusive stuff that comic shops couldn't get anyways. So, and again, I didn't think that much about it, but some guys really, I mean, it was weird. I imagine for Marvel, it was a lot like trying to herd cats because, hey, they come up with this great idea and all of a sudden they get, you know, hundreds, if not, well, probably thousands at the time of voices all going, no. Yeah, and I don't think that happens with Disney when they do it. So what would keep Disney, or even, I would say Marvel, because Marvel's now a franchise. They're saying, you know what? We are not going to publish comics. We're just going to license them out. And it's not as far-fetched as you would think, because they did that with Heroes Reborn.
Yeah.
Where they said, okay, Rob and Jim, take our characters and do something with them. And there was even a time when DC, I believe it was during Shooter's Reign, wasn't it? Said, hey, how about if we license
83 and 84.
Our product to you? And good or bad, said no. So it's not that
Shooter,
far
no, fetched. Shooter said yes.
Oh, he did. I did
I'm
not
I'm
going to
correct
that.
You on a few things you've said here. One, Shooter said yes. Not only did Shooter say yes, but they were in planning stages. Most of Man of Steel was planned by Byrne when he was at Marvel. Most of Batman Year One was planned by Frank Miller when he was at Marvel. When Denny O'Neill went over to DC, because Denny O'Neill was an editor at Marvel, he went back over to DC when he kind of was told, hey, quit using the time you're on the clock to write comics. Do your damn job. And he said, well, fuck you. I'll go over to DC. They'll let me do whatever I want. And so it wasn't Shooter who stopped it. It was the lawyers who said, look, we're already getting sued by First for market monopoly. If we eat up the number two publisher, we've lost the case. And I've always wondered if one of the lawyers would have said, well, yeah, you know, in the direct market, we would be dominating, but out in the magazine world, we're still a small fish in a pond,
yeah.
And we still have newsstand distribution because that's how Diamond keeps their monopoly, by saying, well, we're just a magazine distributor. There are all kinds of magazine distributors. We're just specializing in one area.
Yeah, back
the
in the
second
80s,
thing
back
I want
in the
to bring
90s,
up,
remember, there was still a newsstand market that
yes.
pretty much doesn't exist nowadays.
Well, it's still there.
It's nothing. I mean, if you
it's
can't
get
it.
It's not much, but it's there.
It's nothing. I think the most interesting thing is when I'm wandering around and I actually see comics in areas you wouldn't expect it. I mean, I actually take pictures of them and post it. It's like, hey, look, Toys R Us had comics. Had comics. They disappeared after a Christmas season. Target had comics. And they disappeared. Of course, those are some of the wilder stuff you can find on eBay now.
Cub Foods, if you go to the Cub Foods, you'll see some Archie, some Bongo, some, you'll see Mad Magazine, but here's the thing, you'll see a couple specialty magazines.
It's iffy, too, because that's not at the Cubs that I go to.
You'll also see magazines Marvel's putting out that aren't even listed in the previews. There's the Ultimate Spider-Man magazine, which reprints a lot of these the Marvel Age books, magazine size, with puzzles. And, you know, puzzles and word searches and coloring pages and stuff like that. They've also signed that license with Archie for the digests. And the digests are at Walmart and Cub Foods and places like that. But there's one other thing that you said early on that I'm going to actually be able to push back on, where, you know, old Marvel's sales aren't that great.
Not me. I'm reading it right off Adam, so go at it. Tell Adam he's wrong.
Disney announced with their latest, they put out this stuff for stockholders. And they said that Marvel Publishing has had its best year ever last year, made more profit from publishing and sales than they have in the whole time Disney's owned them. And Disney can't lie about that, Joe, because if they do, that's a violation of the Securities and Exchange Commission.
But that also brings back what you were saying earlier. You know, Adam's talking about comic sales.
Yeah.
You're bringing in graphic novels and international sales and everything else. That's all fine and dandy. When it comes to the bottom line, we have never, and I mean ever, known how comic sales were. That is such
right.
a top secret number that even back in the days when Cap City was around, they were only guessing
right.
what and how they sold. And that brings up still his original point. Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 was a smash movie. The comic tanked because it just wasn't selling. So, yeah, overall it is, but still – is that enough on physical comics?
Well, here's the other thing. Oh, Marvel's selling poorly. Guess what, kids? I don't know how to break this to you. Even last month, which was one of their worst months ever, they still beat DC. They still beat Image. They still beat everybody else.
And this one, I will quote what Mark Twain always quoted. Lies, damned lies, and statistics. I mean, the numbers that a comic is selling now compared to what it was when I had Hot Comics makes me wonder if, really, must there be Marvel Comics?
Well, if you're a comic shop, you damn well better hope there's a Marvel Comics, because otherwise 40% of your income just went away.
It's such a small pimple on the Marvel brand. Maybe it is going to go away. And that's where we again, he's not talking comic shops. You've already changed what the question is.
Yeah.
Does there need, if you're Marvel and you're sitting on, okay, we just did $1 billion in movies. We've done $1 billion in toys. Our publishing has done $1 billion of that. Maybe. And here's what we don't know. What's the percentage of comics sold versus graphic novels?
Here's a different statistic I'll give you, Joe.
Mm-hmm.
Where's the original plot from Captain America: Civil War?
That's why I would say...
Wasn't that a comic?
But you could get that by licensing out, instead of publishing your own books and having editors and artists and the physical process, and you license that out to somebody else. Let them take the hit, you get the licensing fee, and you get a percentage of the sales. If you stop publishing Spider-Man, we will take it back and give it to somebody else. And it's worked. I mean, we see
I made this point with Guardians of the Galaxy about a year ago. If you take up the cost of publishing everything for Guardians of the Galaxy and say it never made a penny, it's a drop in the bucket to how much money they made using those ideas in the movie. Avengers Infinity War. They're going to use Jim Starlin's ideas. Legally, they don't have to give him a penny for that.
Well, there's nothing to keep them from using the ideas that Liefeld and Jim Lee came up with out of Heroes Reborn either.
No, except we don't know that contract. It may be, look, if the ideas that we put in here are used, we get a cut. For Civil War.
We have yet to see an omnibus come out of that, and that God knows they put omnibuses out on everything else.
Yep, but Civil War, Mark Miller said, yeah, that's my plot. I got nothing other than my residuals for the trade paperback. Jim Starlin, he gets the residuals for, you know, the royalties for the trade paperback. Marvel right now, in my opinion, is a licensing cooker. You know, for all the talk about how, well, Ms. Marvel wouldn't exist if not for blah, 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 blah. They're using Ms. Marvel in an upcoming animated movie. You know, the Kamala Khan, they're going to use her in an upcoming animated movie. They will make more money selling the DVDs of that animated movie to girls age 8 to 12 than the cost of publishing everything Marvel put out this year. It's an idea generator. It's basically the reason that Disney would want to continue is they're creating IP. At a fraction of the cost it costs to create IP in Hollywood. Now, if Marvel's regular issue sales get to the point where it's not financially viable, I could see them start to, you know, pull back. But I emailed you a little earlier. I can actually see within 5 years where the comics, they're making them for the digital, they're making them for the trades, they're making them for Scholastic, and they'll sell it to comic shops on the side. It's like, oh yeah, we're putting this out. Much like they did in the early days of the comics, the direct sales market, where it's, look, we put these out on newsstands, but we'll give you guys, we'll let you buy them too. Oh, and we're going to toss a few bones to you guys to see if this market's worth it. Well, now, more and more, they're tossing those bones to digital. With the Infinite Comics, where it's, we're going to try this over here. We're going to do this Deadpool versus Punisher here, and then we'll publish it later. But we've learned that there are a lot of people who buy the Deadpool comics online and a lot of people who buy the Punisher books online. So we're going to have a crossover here. Oh, yeah, we'll print it and sell it in comic shops, too. I think you're going to see more of that than Disney going, yeah, we're not going to publish anymore. And it's just 2 years ago that Star Wars sold 1 million copies. No, 2 years ago. When Star Wars sold 1 million copies, all you got to do is get one hot book again. And it all blows up all over again. So, while I can see why this guy looking at the comic sales and comic shop numbers is going, gee, these don't look good. Guardians of the Galaxy never sold. It never sold. Ever. And I think Marvel does a lot of problems when it's, oh, this book sold? Let's do five.
Yeah, we complained about that. And it's not working anymore, whereas in the past it used to work.
And it kills the main book. Oh, look, Black Panther's selling. Let's do three more Black Panther books. No. No, no, no. Just do one. Just let that one sell. Then try something else with a different character.
And you gotta, you know, we're pretty fussy about what we'll see. And I'm looking at the aborted last Fantastic Four movie. You know, can they take a product? I said, okay, we're going to license, we're going to license Hulk from you, and they change it, everything about the title and the character, and, can you make it work? Or is it like, hey, you know what, you got to stick with what's been laid down and go with that? You know, every time they try to change something significantly, and, you know, you can't do direct adaptations or comic to movie, movie to comic, whatever. But, you know, we look at the Fantastic Four movie, that last one. Yeah, it's a good science fiction movie. It ain't Fantastic Four. Or even Matthew Broderick's Godzilla. It ain't Godzilla. It's a good monster movie, but it ain't Godzilla.
Wasn't even a good monster movie.
And it was adequate. But
there's another movie. Thor Ragnarok used ideas from Planet Hulk.
Yeah,
the movies are going to pull
better. Because that's movies actually newer.
Yeah, the movies are going to look through and go, oh, yeah, I like this. Well, why don't we use this? The whole Scott Lang thing. When you think Ant-Man, of course, you think Henry Pym. But no, they went, oh, yeah, this Ant-Man character who's a criminal is trying to reform himself. Yeah, we're going to use that. Or with the new Spider-Man movie, it's, okay, everybody knows Spider-Man. Oh, I like this Genki character that Miles Morales has in it. Let's use that. Or the Spider-Man animated movie coming out that's going to be Spider-Verse. This is stuff that they get. And, you know, the people doing the comics are just telling stories. And the people going through the movies are like, okay, what do they got that we can pull? You've already done the research, you know, you've already done the market research. Oh, Spider-Verse sold real well. Let's do that. Planet Hulk sold real well. Let's do that.
So Marvel is in a position that DC Comics been in since the 70s. They are a pimple on the butt of a huge marketplace. And as long as they make money, they're fine. If they stop making money, then somebody from Disney may come and shake things up.
Right. But also we've got all this free material that we can draw from.
But what would stop them from saying, you know what, shut it down, we're not doing any more comics, we'll just license out, instead of doing 40, 50 Marvel comics, we'll just let somebody do some meat and potatoes like Spider-Man, X-Men, Avengers. You know, we have a plan coming up for Carol Danvers' movie. Let's license that out to somebody who wants to do it. Because, see, I kind of lean like you said, you know, Disney's got a unique thing here with Marvel Comics. I mean, you call an idea generator, whereas I call it more of a universe. I mean, you've got this pool that if you start tearing it apart and ripping it up, it doesn't work anymore. And, you know, seriously, I don't know if I would buy a comic book licensed by anybody outside of Marvel Comics. If suddenly X-Men were to, you know, shut down, and Lord knows from the rumors we heard they tried, you know, well, we're going to make Inhumans popular. I don't see it happening. I mean, I loved ROM at Marvel. I read it. I don't read the current ROM. It just doesn't strike me the right way. Maybe because, you know, ROM came out during my golden age of comics. And just because Conan moved to Dark Horse doesn't mean I'm going to read Conan anymore. I may pick it up, but it's also, you know, like the graphic novel phenomena. You know, I don't have to buy the monthlies. I'll just pick it up when I feel like it or pick up the omnibuy.
And bringing up Conan's another good idea when it comes to licensing a book out, because Red Sonja was pretty much created by Roy Thomas. There was a Red Sonja who was in some other Robert E. Howard stuff, but pretty much the entire character and idea as being a companion of Conan, that was all Roy Thomas. Well, guess what, kids? Marvel doesn't own that. It was created by a Marvel writer and everything, but now it's owned by Robert E. Howard. And that's why it's over at Dynamite while Conan's at Dark Horse, because they're separate licensable entities. Do you think anybody who they would license it to is going to create a new character, knowing that that new character, they have no interest in it? It's why comic creators don't create new characters for Marvel. And yes, there are examples of people who've done that, and people who've created new villains, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But if you create a character for Marvel, Marvel owns it. And they may give you a goodwill check, depending on your contract. But if you save that character, say, like, oh, I don't know, Savage Dragon, and own it yourself, and go over to Image and publish it, that means the toys are yours, the cartoon series is yours, the archives are yours, everything having to do with the character is yours. You don't have to share it. And if somebody pays you what they call a development fee, which is they come to you and go, hey, we might make a movie out of this character. Now, we might not, but we're going to pay you so that nobody else does. That money's yours. Whereas if somebody, Will Murray, if you know, Squirrel Girl's going to be showing up in that animated movie, Will Murray and Steve Ditko get nothing. They get jack and shit.
Ooh, lucky guys.
So why create a new character for Marvel? I think that's more why you haven't seen a big new character at Marvel or DC, because why would you give it away? Well, you're not going to make as much money if you take it over to Image. Actually, you'll make more money because it's yours.
Well, I think the big thing with that is Marvel and DC are going to be the place you're going to make your name. Once you're a name, then you can go out and play with your own stuff at Image or Boom or Dark Horse or wherever you want to go.
And
it makes me wonder if we'll see anybody big like Frank Miller. I mean, we've got a lot of writers that we like, but you know, there's always somebody who's going to want to play in Marvel's sandbox. And
yep,
we'll see. I suppose names come back occasionally. Yeah, I got this idea. I want to play in the sandbox again.
And Marvel, knowing that creators sell books, people are saying that when C.B. Sibuski came in, first thing he did, he got out his Rolodex, started calling people, and he's throwing money. So you could see some big-name creators coming back to Marvel because they're number one by the skin of their teeth. They want to stay number one. And, Joe, you've been a comic shop owner. Could your shop have survived if Marvel would have, let's say Marvel during their bankruptcy said, "Dah, we're not going to publish anymore." Would your shop have survived?
The big one might have, because it was diverse enough where I could have probably pumped more into DC. It depends on how they went too. I mean, if they liquidated tons of stuff, I might have been picked up enough, but it would have been a scramble. The little one we already know didn't, because we looked at it. And when they screwed up their Secret War schedule, you remember this.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have made enough money in sales to cover my following rent, you know, for that September, because there was almost no Marvel comics coming out. And the smaller shop did not have enough diversity where I could afford to go just with DC and everybody else. I had to have Marvel as part of the equation. And I would suspect a lot of shops are like that now.
I'm hearing that shops are shutting down, and most of them are saying it's because Marvel books aren't selling as well, therefore they're not bringing in enough money. Now, I'll be blunt, they should have diversified when the money was pouring in. But that's the problem. When money's pouring in, people go, it will be like this forever. They don't go, money's pouring in and things are cyclic, so why don't I use the money that's pouring in now to try new things?
Pogs! They're making a comeback, you know.
Porgs!
They might be making a comeback.
It won't be Pogs, Joe. It'll be Porgs.
Yes. Don't make me run upstairs and get my daughter's porks.
Yeah, because she'd probably smack you.
Oh, she's not home. She don't mind if I use it to, you know, make annoying noises.
Oh, okay. So, there you go. That's us beating Marvel with a stick.
Yeah. So, basically, must there be a Marvel Comics? For now.
I think if there's no Marvel Comics, you're going to see the end of comic shops. But, as for Disney, hey, it's free. Basically, it's free content for them. You know, the amount of money that they pay comic creators isn't even a drop in a bucket compared to what a script rewrite pays. I mean, you know, Marvel and DC, the rumor is that if you're a writer, you maybe get $100 to $150 a page unless you're a big name. And that's for writing. If you're a screenwriter, you're looking at six figures to write a script. Seven if you've got a big enough name. So, yeah. If you're Disney, which one are you wanting to pay, Joe?
Yeah. And I always come back to the line that Will Eisner said, doesn't matter what DC Marvel does, because somebody somewhere is always going to want to make comics.
Yeah, well, I got heat with Will Eisner.
That doesn't matter, because you're not going to be at MSP Comic-Con 2018, where you will see said creators. There will be probably creators that do work Marvel, DC, and Image, but you'll also see a ton of creators that don't necessarily work the big time. They have their own comic book. They're self-publishers. They're doing their own thing the way they want to. And if you are said creator, you should probably pause this podcast, head over to mcbacomiccons.com, because they have posted the creator applications for people who want to go to the Comic-Con. And, you know, you fill it out. You tell them who you are, what you do. What they're trying to do is they're trying to get people who are actually active in the comic community, making comics. You know, there might be some guys who probably haven't done things in a few years, some of their old faves, but they definitely want to bring in the new blood, and they definitely want to promote the comic industry by bringing up fresh young talent. I always like to bring up the fact, you know, I was the one who told Nick, hey, there's this new guy, Frank Cho, doing this Liberty Metals. Bring him in. And
we stole all his money at the poker table.
And we did, and all those people went out the next day and got artwork from him that is probably a college investment now. Now his stuff is pretty. But you never know who you run into, and that's one of the things I love with the last couple cons I've been to. I love to come back with some of the creator-owned books and just, you know, tell you what I think about them. Love them, hate them, look out for them. You know, just some of the fun we do. Speaking of fun, we had Box Day.
Yes, we did.
So, how was your Box Day, Mr. Strode?
I had lots of cool stuff. And lots of cool stuff.
Me too. Dish. Let's dish.
Okay. We had Athena Voltaire, one of my favorite books. There is a Athena Voltaire Pulp Tales prose novel. Although it's not a novel, it's a collection of short stories. But still, it's a bunch of short stories featuring the character Athena Voltaire with art by the creator. And I like this sort of thing. I've always liked prose novels about comic characters and things like that. But this is one of those anthologies where it's, you know, guys who write in pulp, in the pulp field, pitched short stories that were all published in this. Got lots of big books, Joe.
Oh, me too.
I got Big Hard Sex Criminals, Volume 1.
Oh, boy, if that doesn't get us. No wonder we have an explicit label on this show.
They reprinted Black Panther, Panther's Quest. This was a book that Don McGregor, actually, when he was working on it, this was published in 8-page snippets in Marvel Comics Presents, and it was, you know, the longest serial they ever did in that. And he and Gene Colan were told that when it's done, it'll be collected as a trade paperback. Well, by the end, the editor who'd promised them that was no longer working at Marvel, so it's taken 25 years for it to be collected, but now it's collected. I got the Captain America Omnibus!
Omnimama.
By Mark Waid and Ron Garney. And I opened it up, looked, and boy, those first couple issues by Ron Garney really look very imagey. Getting smoothed down his art for a few issues. And I forgot that in the first issue, Captain America's dead.
He got better.
Because he died in the Mark Gruenwald run. The last issue Mark Gruenwald did, Captain America died. Weird how that didn't get the kind of publicity it got 20 years later when they did it a second time.
Well, it's a difference when you get shot versus, you know, just dying.
Yeah. I got the Jack Kirby's Fourth World Omnibus.
I know. I really wanted that, but I just couldn't. I couldn't
and
afford
now, it. And now, it'll, now, we all talk about the freaking. Yeah. Let's see. Let's see, the new Marvel Comics Digest X-Men, which I haven't even opened up yet.
Yeah, I got that too.
Planet of the Apes Archive, Volume 2, which reprints the original stories from Marvel's Planet of the Apes Black and White magazine, which was, in the 70s, their best-selling black and white magazine. And Shadow, The Death of Margot Lane, written and drawn by Matt Wagner. Oh, and also the Craig Yeo book, Mummies, Classic Monsters of Pre-Code Horror Comics. I thought it was hardcover, but it's a trade paperback, so it doesn't look as nice on the shelf as his other hardcovers. But still, a bunch of old 50s horror comics full of mummies. So, yeah, I got a whole lot to read. I didn't get a chance to read anything this weekend, but by God, I got a big old stack of books. Joe, what'd you get?
Well, I'll start off with what I read, because as you know, it's now slow time at the airport. So in between, checking bags for bombs, I actually get a chance to read stuff. So naturally, I whipped this one out. Dark Avengers by Brian Michael Bendis, The Complete Collection. I have not read this before. I tried reading it when it came out. Didn't like it, didn't get into it, but now that I understand part of it, it reads a little bit better as a book. It does come to a fast conclusion, and I think that was because that was part of the, what they call it, Siege, the whole Siege of Asgard.
Yes.
I think that was the ending of it, which I have in comic form. I don't have it in book form, but this was a fun book, and I think this is the last bit of Bendis Avengers there is, because everything else is out. There's let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 new Avenger ones. I think there's a Mighty Avenger. Let's take a look here. Mighty Avengers that came out, and that was its own. And then Avengers 1, 2, 3, and I think that's pretty much I got all the Bendis Avengers. The eighth new Teen Titans came out. This is Marv Wolfman, George Perez. This brings you through issue 50, and then it's when they changed it. They did kind of a weird thing with DC, is they decided to switch a lot of their books to, what do they call it? The was it the Baxter format at the time? Or
yes.
And the regular comics kept the original stuff for a while. In this case, from 49 to 58. And then after a year was up, they continued reprinting what had come out in the Baxter stuff for previous year until people stopped buying it altogether, and then they just canceled it. They did it with Teen Titans. They did it with – what other series did they do that with? Was it Legion? Tales of Legion? Yeah, Tales of Legion.
And The Outsiders.
So the original ones were Tales of the Teen Titans, 49 to 58. 49 was interesting. It was probably the equivalent of a fill-in issue, but it actually tied into the story, because back then Flash had quit the Titans and he was starting to lose his powers. So they called in Carmen Infantino to do part of a Kid Flash story, with George Perez doing the pre-wedding stuff, because issue 50 was the big wedding issue of Donna Troy and some guy who probably doesn't matter in continuity anymore.
Some guy really, who's dead.
A really, really fun issue, because there were so many Easter eggs in there. They tied in all sorts of stuff. They put in a bunch of little tie-ins to the early Titan series and currently. So just one of the fun issues that I actually have a standalone in, is because every so often I just pull it out to read it. And then, of course, it went into the rest of the Titans run, and by that time George is left to start working on the new series. So they brought in Rich Buckler, Chuck Patterson, Ron Randall. So they finished up the series. I don't know if there's going to be a volume 9 going into I think they dropped the new with the new series and just called it the Teen Titans, because the first 6 issues they deal with the Trigon thing, which was a subplot in these issues. If there is, I'll pick it up. But I read through that. And then a book that I bought, and then I discovered I could have bought the omnibus, but I'm happy I bought it. JSA by Jeff Johns, The Justice Society of America. Another fantastic book that they just, I mean, this was the heart and soul of DC Comics at the time that this came out. This was in the 2000s. Just a fun run. It ties in to other series so great, but not in a way that makes you want to go, you know. They have Hippolyta there. She's not Wonder Woman, but that was that whole thing we've talked about in the past where John Byrne decided, yes, there was a Wonder Woman. It was Wonder Woman's mom. She fought with the Justice Society. Well, she comes back and she hangs with these guys for a while. This is the first series. They did 16 issues or 15 issues in the files, and then they stopped and they redid it. Was there an event in the middle of that, or was it just – do you recall the reason for that? Because there were two JSA series, and this one I think covers the first one. I might have to go to Atomic Avenue and take a look. Let's see what they say. Put on your thing. There's JSA. Let's see. Yeah, that's the series that I got. Oh, let's see. Well, I got the first 16. So maybe this is just volume one.
Yeah, there were two volumes.
Yeah.
But I'm trying to remember, I think this fourth volume. When did the fourth volume?
Okay, this was 1999 to 2006, volume one. And the second volume, let's see. No, I don't know what that, did they call it just Justice Society?
No. It was, gosh, let me look here.
Because I know when I...
JSA lasted till 2006.
Yeah.
And then Infinite Crisis happened.
Oh, maybe that's what it was.
So they started over with a new number one.
Okay. So I've got more coming. And this was fun stuff. Those are my first three reads. Other things I'm looking forward to, I got all the True Believers that have the Phoenix in it, because that was their big thing a couple months ago. We mentioned the Marvel Comics Digest. Let's see, I've got the, hang on a second, I got to move my stack of stuff. Oh, okay, I've got a new Astro City volume, Reflections. I didn't get to that. I've raved about this one before, but I finally got a copy of Moon Cop by Tom Gauld. Kind of a very minimalist type thing. I read the Free Comic Book Day preview, so I'm enjoying that. I've got an issue of Alter Ego 150 that has the 95 years of Stan Lee I'm looking forward to. Back issue 102 that deals with anti-heroes like Deathstroke, Vigilante. I picked up Doctor Strange, Lord of Fears. This is one of those particular storyline that went through a bunch of comics, and Doctor Strange would pivotal. See Thor in 299-320, Dead of Night, Marvel Spotlight, Marvel 2-in-1, Marvel Team Up. You know, they don't do that a lot anymore, where like a different storyline flows through all these different series, and you got to kind of plot them together. That's what makes it kind of fun when you pick up a run like this, because to have it all in one spot is great. The other big one I got, I picked up Volume 1, Book 1 of I Hate Fairyland by Scotty Young with a garnished pink cover that I will enjoy putting that on a bookshelf just to have fun with it. And, yeah, I've got tons of comics. I've got a bunch of number 2s I got to get to, the Doomsday Clock 2, Chasing Hitler 2. I got my Marvel 2-in-1, and these Port of Earth, and some of this I'm going to talk about when we get to Freaking and Geeking. But you know, as we read this stuff, we'll be talking more about it in the future. So, I also got Mighty Crusaders number 1, so I'm looking forward to that. Lots of number 1s, lots of trades, and oddly enough, I've actually read through half of them.
Wow!
I got zero willpower. I just had to read it. And I've read even more, but we'll get to that when we get to Freaking and Geeking.
Well, you know who has read through all their stuff?
Well, not you? Me? Adam?
No! These guys, our sponsors.
Silly old sponsors.
That's right, here at the Solitaire Rose Radio Network, we have ads, and our first sponsor is me. That's right, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rat Bastard. I have my first book out with Dangerous Dan Moore. It's the first 100 strips of our online web strip, Worldwide News, the story of the lowest-rated cable news network. And you can get yourself a copy with commentary, with all sorts of extras, with signatures and everything. Just email Dan over at lordshadowflame@gmail.com. Our top sponsor, who's been with us since day one, is DreamHost. DreamHost.com. You need yourself a website, and DreamHost.com is the number one web host in the whole known universe. Just head over to DreamHost.com, put in the code CRAZY, K-R-A-Y-Z, get $20 off your first year. How can you beat that? Our other sponsor is Graze, G-R-A-Z-E.com. Healthy snacks for a healthy lifestyle. Just head over to Graze, put in the code CORYS3R5P. Your first and fifth box are free. You can get them weekly. You can get them bi-weekly. You can get them monthly. You just order a whole bunch of them. It's great stuff to keep you away from the vending machine at work. Now, if you would like to leave a comment for any of the podcasts that we do, we'd love those. Go ahead and email us at solitairerosenetwork@gmail.com, or you can call 952-856-0519. Operators are standing by. Okay, it's just a place that we'll record your calls, but we'll play them on the air. We'll answer your questions. We love getting feedback. Tell us what you think. Ask a question. Suggest a topic. Be a guest. Send us your stuff. solitairerosenetwork@gmail.com. If you would like to advertise on any of the Solitaire Rose radio shows, you can. Just email us at solitairerosenetwork@gmail.com, subject advertising. Thanks.
And after we do the sponsors, we talk about what is coming up here on the Solitaire Rose Radio Network. A new episode of Crazy Comics and Stories every week. Every week.
Every week. Yes.
Every week.
There's no
doubt. We're even going to have two special episodes that drop sometime in the next week or two or three or four. Where it's the stuff we recorded on Free Comic Book Day. I'm finally going to get it up because, boy, is it a bear to clean.
Yeah. Just don't record in moving cars, kids.
Nah, it's more, there are times when it's, you know, we're talking and then dead silence for a couple of minutes and then, ooh, look at that.
That was a hell of a billboard we passed. There's no way I can get to those stinky bushes.
Then Novelcast is back. Novelcast dropping this Friday. The week after that, you get Bad Advice with Wolfie and Corey. Then Novelcast. Then hopefully Dan will get some time and we can record another Bad Advice. And Solitaire Rose Radio, you never know when that's going to show up. I am already lining up interviews. We got some returning guests, some people who've been on the show before, and some new people. New people! And... Yeah. And some of them won't even be interviews. Some of them will just be the kind of odd stuff that I like trying. And then, Joe, I've got to twist your arm and get you to do another episode of Comics in Review. We've got a lot of Master of Kung Fu to get through,
someday,
you know.
Someday we will.
So lots going on here at the Solitaire Rose Radio Network. And after we do that, we ask Joe the most important question of the day. Joe?
Yes, I am wearing pants.
What kind of lotion do you wear?
That's a personal question I refuse to answer. Wait for the book.
I didn't even know people use lotion often until I moved to Minnesota. I still do not own lotion, and when I say that, people look at me as if I'm crazy. No, Joe, what's going on the eBays?
eBay is hated by Skype.
It is. Folks, this is like the fifth fucking time, and we've been working on it for 30 minutes. K-R-A-Y-Z. I got tons of goodies. I put up some stuff, including some rare things. I know I was going to ask Corey if he had copies of the Static Shock trade paperback.
Yes, I do.
Very, very valuable.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They're about $30 a pop, and I had one. I put it up. Did not last long, so you had your chance. K-R-A-Y-Z, if you see something you like, let me know if you buy it. I'll do something nice. I usually include some fun stuff. I might deliver it to you. I might give it to you for free. I'll give you something that survived the purge. But we like to take care of our friends here on the podcast here. So that's all we're saying, because with net neutrality in full effect, They do not like my eBays. At least not here at the Solitaire Rose Compound.
Well, now we get to my favorite part of the show. No, not where we go to Joe's house and beat his computer into submission. It's Freaking and Geeking. Joe! I have a feeling I know what it's going to be, but what are you freaking on?
Folks, I'm just going to give you a rundown of what happened here. Three times we tried to get the eBay thing going. All three times, the interwebs gave out. I mean, this is actual interweb dying on me, you know, where it just, I had to reboot it. And then, you know, every come back online, going, so Joe, what's going on eBay's? Well, you know, I'm trying to sell the reboot the machine. And then Skype decided to upgrade or downgrade or whatever the hell, download, you know, update or whatever the hell it wanted to do. And it did it while Corey was trying to call, and at the exact same time the interwebs gave out, and then all hell broke loose. I couldn't get Skype to work. It's such an integral part of Windows now, I can't uninstall it and reinstall it. I'm like, well, troubleshoot it. Oh, okay, we only got 52 steps on that. And then none of it was Skype related. It was all Windows related. I was like, oh, geez. So finally, I rebooted. While I was doing that, the interweb settled down. And then as I went to go on, it was like, it couldn't find me. I no longer existed in the world of Skype, which made sense in some way because I have had this Skype account for at least 7 years. Because that's how long we've been doing this here podcast. Maybe even longer. I don't know the exact date. And it predated Microsoft buying Skype. And, of course, the big thing with Microsoft, if they want you to give them all your information, or at least the stuff they haven't taken off your computer yet, and open up a new magical Microsoft account that will give you access to everything. We want to tie Skype into everything. Matter of fact, I think I wired it into my toilet somehow. Boy, are they lucky. So I actually had to physically have Corey call me, which you know, he's, you know, internet, you know, Facebook, IM, texting. He's hip on that. But to use the actual phone to call someone? But
phone,
he did.
The phone's in the other room.
Could not. Yeah, I noticed because you didn't answer it yet, dickwad. But
I don't have my phone anywhere near when I record because I'm a professional, a national treasure, and a professional.
And, of course, in the middle of troubleshooting, does he think to call it?
No.
I mean, I have a distinct phone ring when I know Corey calls. He never calls, but if I hear the tone, I know it's him. Do you think Corey's smart enough to do that? No. So, finally, I have to get online, which fortunately I can do now, and say, hey, yeah, Knob, give me a call. And from there, it's like, call me. And then what? It was like, I mean, it was like my name didn't exist anymore. I was a Skype nobody. And for a moment there, I was running around going, I'm free, I'm free. No more podcasts. I can't do that anymore. But then I looked at the copy of Worldwide News that I have piled up here, you know, that you yourself can get if you go to www.worldwidenews.solitairerose.com. My copy's autographed, but the ones I have aren't. And I thought, how the hell am I going to get rid of these things again? I certainly ain't going to no Comic-Con again and just purge them in the, hide them in the dollar bins and get rid of them. So I set me up a new account. I gave every, it took a while to get the blood test, but I finally was able to get through to, Microsoft and reestablish this here Skype account. So hopefully that actually holds for a while so we don't have to go through this crap again. I know for you, the listeners, it was seamless, but for us, it was 40 minutes of crap.
I watched and videos.
I couldn't even do that. And the other thing, I was talking with Corey earlier in the day. You know, we use Audacity to kind of edit our podcasts and that. Somehow, when Windows did one of their major upgrades, they erased Audacity off my computer, which was really weird because all of a sudden everything that I had as an Audacity project is now work on Groove Music. Oh, yeah, this is some hip new crap that Microsoft shoved down my ass, as well as like two or three games that I have no intention of ever playing suddenly popped up on my feed. I'm like, geez. And I don't normally use I mean, obviously the computer's Microsoft, but I mean, I can't afford an Apple. But boy, if they were for sale for about $400 or $500, I would just go buy one now and just say goodbye to the PC world. I'm just tired of it. So, but I got Audacity back, so I don't have to worry when I finally do get the Solo Joe going. At least that surprise won't, derail me. Although now I got to figure out how to get all my Groove files back. I lost my Groove. So and that's basically my beefing is I'm real tired. And of course, if you've been watching the headlines, apparently the lovely microprocessors we use have such a fatal flaw in them that it's possible that yes, you have to go update your computer immediately because somebody's going to use these. They can use this to get a hold of all your personal information, download your porn, find out what you really feel about Oprah 2020. Boy, the canned ham industry is going to be happy. And the punchline is, of course, if you download all the updates, your computer processing may go down by about a third. Of course, if you just go buy a new computer... I'm telling you, Corey, it wasn't this way with net neutrality. I'm telling you. We were a national treasure. We could be found anywhere you needed. Now we're just nobodies. No wonder Obama doesn't come on our podcast. Corey, what are you freaking on?
Well, the first thing I am freaking on is my workload. Uh-oh. I have a hanging at the home story, Joe.
Woohoo!
Saturday, this was my weekend off. So Saturday I had to stay till like 9 in the morning, and then I had to come back at 7 at night. And I was thinking, oh, you know, 7 at night on a Saturday night, they'll have gone out, residents will have gone out and done stuff. I've worked in this cottage before, and most of them go to bed around 9. So I get in around 7, and everyone is arguing with everyone. No one is listening to what the other person has to say. Even the nonverbal or people with the strong speech impediment, so you can't understand them, are starting arguments. And they can start an argument, you know, by glaring or the tone of voice or whatever. I am working with one of the clients to get him dressed and ready for bed, and all of a sudden I hear things being thrown and screaming, and I go out.
He wasn't on the phone line with me, so he knew it wasn't me.
And we weren't watching wrestling.
No.
So I go out, and a client in a wheelchair and a client with a walker are in the laundry room fighting. The wheelchair's running into the walker, and the walker's being used to hit the wheelchair, and I get in and get between them, and that was not a happy moment of my life when two metal things are being used to hit each other, and you put yourself between them. I, unfortunately, am not made of metal. I am made of parts that bruise. So I get that all broken up, get everybody back in into their separate corners. And by the time it's 10 o'clock, it's time to go to sleep. And I have to wake up a number of times in the night because clients are now, you know, the fight is over and the adrenaline rush is gone. So they start crying and they want to be consoled and they want to apologize and they're so sorry. And it's like, I understand you're sorry. Please just let me sleep. You can apologize in the morning. And Sunday night, I had to go back. Now, this is on top of the regular full-time job. So last week was New Year's Day. So, Joe, you know, I had New Year's Day off. I still put in over 100 hours last week. So I'm tired.
He's tired.
I'm really
and
tired.
On top of that, Disney hotels took down all the Do Not Disturb signs. So Corey can't even go to Disney and not be disturbed.
Not only that. The Friday night, the night before all of the chaos, we had a fire drill at 4:30 in the goddamn morning because the state says we have to do full fire drills twice a year on each shift. And let me tell you something, there is nothing more joyful in this world than waking up the group home residents at 4:30 in the morning with the fire drill noise. Two of them refused to get in their wheelchairs to go out. So what normally, you know, we're timed and we have to get everybody, you know, to the exit within 10 minutes. We got there at 9:58, and one of the clients, we just basically took their bed and moved the bed. We're going to take this bed outside if you aren't getting out of it, boy. And, of course, nobody wanted to go back to sleep.
Never.
So they came out, and the clients who were awake, one of them wanted to watch TV. And it's like, okay, I'll just lay here. You can watch TV. They put it on Disney Junior. Joe, have you seen the Disney Junior?
Not since the kids hit puberty, no.
Disney Junior is a channel for children age 1 to 5. And I swear it was animated on a Commodore 64. It's the ugliest, most annoying channel in the history of mankind. There ain't nothing better in this world, Joe, than sitting in the living room with a bunch of residents trying to doze off while the Disney Junior's going and they're chanting along with all the songs. Now, comics annoyed me as well. Marvel done canceled a whole bunch of books. And they haven't.
Does anybody really need Marvel comics? Oh, wait a minute, we covered that. Never mind.
Yeah, we did that about 5 hours ago.
Yeah.
You know, we've had longer shows, but I don't know if we've had longer recording sessions.
No, yeah. Very, very rare.
But She-Hulk is canceled. I would say Marvel has canceled about a third of their books. And for a lot of them, I wondered why they were there in the first place. You know, Iceman was a decent book, but did anybody write Marvel and go, you know who needs their own book?
Iceman!
You know why another character needs their own book? America. So where's America from? We don't know. This is going to be her first appearance.
America.
And, oh, by the way, in her origin has to do with alternate universes and, oh, fuck. I don't know if I've told this story before, Joe, but there was one time I drove my son out of the house by explaining the origin of Cable.
That's a nasty thing to do. That's almost child abuse.
He was looking at a comic and he said, oh, this Cable character's kind of cool. What's his origin? And I said, well, let's start by the fact that he's the child of Cyclops and an evil demonic clone of Jean Grey. And it gets worse from there. And the last thing, now normally, this would be in the Geeking, Joe.
Mm.
I even put pictures up of it. I got me the New Gods Omnibus.
Mm-hmm.
Almost 1,500 pages of pure Kirby goodness. Probably the greatest comic series ever. This thing's big enough to stun a Studebaker. If I ever have to take an oath, I'm not going to take an oath on the Bible. I'm bringing this thing, and I'm going to put my right hand on that and raise my other hand. There's a misprint in it. Now, if it was a misprint where one of the pages was printed twice, that'd be okay. But no, one of the pages is printed instead of one of the other pages. So I'm wondering if DC's going to do a replacement for them. We haven't heard anything yet because it was just this weekend where they found out, oh, crap, there's a misprint. This is a $150 book that is shipped from China.
Is this widespread or do you think it's just...
It's all of them.
Ah. Because, like, I had
that
problem.
It was an issue with the film, not with the printing.
See, I had that problem. You had it with Amazing Fantasy 1, and I had I had it with the Alpha Flight, where it was just my particular copy or your copy, but the whole friggin' run?
Yes.
Okay, I guess I'll scratch that off my get it from my birthday list.
Yeah, I would wait until they do a second print. Joe, what are you geeking on?
Well, I had a good day at work that could have been a bad day. I won't get into super detail because it actually happened a while back, but I show up for work and I am the only supervisor to cover 4 remote areas. Now, I kind of figured this was coming.
Like Albuquerque?
Not that remote, but still two different buildings and three different areas. And I'm kind of like, I knew this was coming. My supervisors knew this was coming. Not one of them thought to put in for overtime to say, hey, we need something. And I know other supervisors that would take the overtime. So I just kind of, you know, turned a negative into a positive. I was able to find enough people that I trust to actually run the area, get the numbers I need, because, you know, government, we love to count numbers. And by the time the day was over, I mean, I talked to the manager on duty. I was telling him what the problem was, and I kind of sighed and went, I need a cookie. And he just laughed. And I was able to get everything running. I got help from the other terminal. I got help from the checkpoint. Again, I had certain officers that I trust. They were able to step up and do it. We have this goofy pay-per-performance system, and one of the things I'm supposed to do is point out when people go the extra mile. And in my opinion, they did go the extra mile. The problem with baggage is we're out of sight, out of mind. Unless, you know, I don't know if you saw pictures of JFK where the baggage went out of control because of the storms and the shutdown and the power outage and all the crap. And that wasn't even TSA's fault, but they had people searching luggage, looking for their luggage because they didn't know where any of the luggage was. It was just all out on the floor behind stanchions. Well, things worked out actually pretty good. I actually wrote up some positive reviews and sent it off to the powers that be. Hopefully they actually read what I wrote. And when come time around to grade people, they actually have something positive they can grade it on, as well as myself, since I actually, you know, did one of these things. It's one thing I hate doing. I don't know, Corey, if at your job you have self-assessments that you have to do.
Yeah.
To me, that's just laziness, because it's one of two things. It means your supervisor either isn't working with you enough to know what the hell you do, or they just want you to do their job for you. And once you figure out which it is, you know, fine, self-assessment can be fine. But that was one of the criticisms last time, is that, you know, well, you really don't do this particular thing where you send us stuff. Okay, well, I'm going to do it. And I did. And my manager, God bless him, brought me a cookie. Actually, he brought me six because he didn't know what kind of cookie I liked. So
even better.
At least somebody was appreciative of the effort that I did. The following week, a similar situation, and I told the manager up front, I said, you know, look at this. You know, it's the same day that I was talking about. This is going to happen next Thursday, and I can tell you what I'm going to do. If it ain't corrected, I'm calling in sick. I said, you can have a Zen lesson. I will take any write-up you want to give me, because this is bullshit. Well, fortunately, they had enough overtime where when I got here, there was another supervisor here. No, and the thing is I'm not a supervisor in terms of that there's certain things I can and cannot do. I'm a supervisor in the eyes that I can run the area. I can do the paperwork. But, you know, someone wants to go home early, can't do that. Someone called in sick, can't do that. Somebody does, you know, any discipline thing, can't do that. You know, I'm just there to run the area. You know, that's why you see, if you ever walk through security, you'll see people with one stripe. They're the workers. Two stripe, they work and they're supervisors. Three stripes, they also work. They are the supervisors, the ones you will probably yell at if you don't like the way your pat down went. But they're also not union protected, which means they also work like management, which means they get pushed around pretty good. So, in any case, I got a cookie. Speaking of cookies, I gotta call up my phone here because I got an interesting text yesterday from my wife and my daughter while I was at work. Let's see, from my wife. I got a call, said, we need chocolate, from my daughter. We need chocolate, both about seconds apart from different phones. So I realized they're together. So naturally, me being the smart ass I am, I sent a note to my wife, cold, hot, or room temperature? And she said, yes. To my daughter, I said, do you want cake, ice cream, or candy? And she said, yes. So I stopped at Holiday and bought $50 worth of chocolate goodness. I got ice cream bars. I got chocolate chip cookies. They didn't have any chocolate donuts. I got four different types of candy, Three Musketeer, Rolo, Nestle's Crunch, Hershey King Size Bar. I got chocolate milk. I got chocolate covered potato chips. I got chocolate pretzels. I didn't get a pint of chocolate ice cream, but I did, like I said, get ice cream sandwich. I got those horrible confectionery chemical chocolate things where it's like two cookies and chocolate in between it. So when I got home, I just dumped it on the ground, and my daughter had that look I haven't seen on her face since Halloween, you know, candy. And my wife looked at me like, what the fuck? By God, they got chocolate. So I'm a giving guy. Corey, did I talk about William Shatner Presents Chaos on the Bridge?
Yes.
Okay. I had that down because that's really the only thing I've watched in the last month. I just something I picked up probably off CBS or PBS because it was just, hey, look, Shatner's talking. So, well, let's get into the what I've read. For Christmas, I talked about Comic Shop, The Retail Mavericks Who Gave Us a New Geek Culture by Dan Guarino. I devoured this book along with the other three graphic novels, that I mentioned in the day. What was kind of fun with this book is it covered two shops that I was familiar with. Obviously, Dreamhaven was one of them, and I'm one of the guys who actually started buying stuff at Kidder's first store when he was 20, and I was 12, so that was kind of interesting, and they talk about how he weathered the different things and went through it. They cover a lot of the store from a place in Virginia called the Laughing Ogre. I've been to one of their stores, I think, that was bought in the chain. They cover a lot of ground. Bud Plant, Phil Suling, I can't think of Hanley from Jim Hanley. They talk a lot. I finally saw a picture of Carol Kalish, who is probably single-handedly responsible for getting most comic stores a cash register. The book, you know, it talks about the founding of the direct market, all the different stores, how they reacted. And then, of course, it was interesting watching Dreamhaven, because when I was buying comics, I bought a lot of my comics from him. They talk about the wars that, if you want to call them that, how the Phil Suling store or distribution collapsed, brought the rise of Diamond and Capital, Bud Plant's distribution business. I'm trying to think of some of the other ones. And of course, it gets real interesting for me because now it covers into the area under the title Chapter 12. Excuse me a second. I got to get ready for this. Death Mate, 1988 to 94.
He's got a puke.
I knew I couldn't do it. But this was the area that you and I have talked about because this is when I had Hot Comics. This is when it ended up being just Capital City and Diamond, how Marvel bought Heroes, totally muffed it up. And it was kind of neat just to hear the behind-the-scenes, what was going on while I was busy sitting in my store trying to keep the damn place running. An awesome... awesome book. In the back has a number of comic shops that are still around. Some of them date from back in the 70s that haven't either been sold or have disappeared. A number of them that I've been to, like Forbidden Planet. Now, a really nice write-up in on Dreamhaven, and of course one on The Source, Comics and Games. A little bit stuff behind the scenes with that. Corey, if you haven't read this, you're going to have to read it. Either buy it or borrow my copy, because this, you will, if you don't already know this, this will fill in holes that you probably, in your vast knowledge. So next time I see you, I'll borrow this to you. Just an incredible book. If you're anywhere, shape, or form, love the history of comics, you definitely got to pick this bad boy up. In terms of what I've read, I read the first issue of The Villain. That's from Red Giant Entertainment, written by Neil Adams, or I should say created by him. He didn't really write it or art, so this is probably one of those techno-comic type things. But interesting enough, talks a lot about kind of like a James Vaughn type thing, but as you might have guessed, the person doing it is kind of the bad guy of the story. In terms of Marvel Legacy, I read the first issue of Doctor Strange, the first issue of Captain America, Mark Waid, the first issue of Amazing Spider-Man, which I loved all of them.
Captain America was so good.
Oh, good. Doctor Strange was interesting because it starts out, right? Loki is the Sorcerer Supreme. Say what? And, of course, Spider-Man I like because he's getting busy on the cover. I think the other ones I think I talked about, because I reread them, Black Lightning, Cold Dead Hands by Tony Isabella, beginning of a miniseries, really good. Halloween Fest, Mortal Instruments, which was a taste of what becomes the graphic novel. I looked for it earlier today. I did what Corey said. We've talked about in the past where I just went to the source, bought a graphic novel. Couldn't find this one, but I did look around. I did read – you talked last podcast about Chasing Hitler.
Actually, yes.
Two podcasts ago. I got my issue, and I will double what you say. Oh, fascinating book, a lot of fun. I don't know if they're setting it up for a movie, but read five comics. I got to give you a fuck you because you got them goddamn shiny black covers. And of course, on the back, I got my nice big fingerprint on it. People, stop that shit. God, don't make me say it again. I read The Master of Kung Fu, which I believe is a one-shot written by our buddy, our comic fan, CM Punk.
Yeah, I reviewed that.
I enjoyed it. But then again, I wasn't expecting it. When I read it, I was kind of like, why did I buy this? And I read through it, and then, CM Punk wrote it. Okay. So I enjoyed it. And the last one I give thumbs up to is called Port of Earth. This is from Top Cow. I'm not sure if it's an ongoing series or a miniseries, but essentially our first contact with aliens is not – it isn't invasion. It isn't we come in peace. It's a business arrangement. Apparently water is used as fuel for a lot of the aliens out there. So they set up a giant, for better or for worse, gas station. The only thing is there's interesting rules. We're not allowed to see the aliens. They're not allowed to see us. And of course, being that there's obviously always somebody that's going to break the rules, that's essentially what sets it up. You have the ESA, which I'm trying to find out what it stands for, but they are basically the group assigned to corral aliens to keep them from harming humans. And well, they're not allowed to harm the aliens because that's bad for business. You can almost see where this is going. And this is just the first issue from Top Cow. Enjoy it. I recommend it. The last thing I'm geeking on is kind of a personal triumph for both myself and my wife. We are 47% less in debt now than we were a year ago today.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And we're busting our ass doing it, you know, trying to get everything arranged. Part of it is, I've cut back comics to really almost the bare minimum. And I'm really going more hardcore in graphic novels. But there are choices to be made. Some of them worked out. I mean, I'm really bumming that I did not get to buy the Kirby Omnibus, although I guess I'm going to get around two, hopefully. So we'll see how that happens. I did finally open up and read the Infinity Gauntlet Omnibus, and it's not arranged the way I thought it was. All the crossovers are there, but essentially they do the Silver Surfer up through the Infinity Gauntlet, and that's the first half of the book. The second half of the book are all the crossovers. And my daughter was looking at it, and I said, well, if you really just want to catch the story, just read the first part, and then the rest of it's all the crossovers. They didn't integrate the crossovers the way I thought they might, but then again, they probably couldn't because that really would have screwed up the flow of things. But they're there, so I can stop and read it. Other than that, things are going good. Corey, what you geeking on?
Well, the first thing I am geeking on, over on the Facebooks, if you are in the Wally Wood discussion group, artist Paul Kirshner, who some people know from his work on The Realist, he is another one of these artists who got his start working for Wally Wood. And he is telling Wally Wood stories, as well as pictures from back in the 70s working in Wollywood Studio. And it is fascinating stuff. Talking about how he would get jobs, how he would train artists. It's a history lesson from a guy who really, other than some of the stuff in the Wollywood book that Fantagraphics is printing, you don't hear much from, because he went into the world of, you know, the alternative weeklies, and he didn't really work in regular comic books. So it's a new voice telling comics history and talking a lot about how Wollywood would interact with people in Hollywood, basically trying desperately to sell something so he didn't have to work in comics anymore, because the pay in comics was so bad that he had to work all the time just to make rent. So it's heartbreaking, because Wollywood's story is heartbreaking. His whole life, from when EC ended onward, it's just, it's hard to read, but the art is so phenomenal, and the stories he's telling are just great. This weekend was the biggest wrestling show in the world, other than WrestleMania.
Ooh.
Wrestle Kingdom from New Japan Pro Wrestling was this weekend. And it had two headliners. Headliner number one was Chris Jericho versus Kenny Omega, the cleaner. And the second was...
Wait a minute. I thought you were the cleaner.
No. Kenny Omega's the cleaner. That's the cleaner shirt I wear. That's the Kenny Omega shirt.
Well, then why are women across the nation standing up and saying, yeah, me too, because you clean their place and now they don't want to talk to you anymore?
I don't know.
I'm going to have to get some of my best people in on that. Bun, you want to check that out?
Maybe you should watch some Kenny Omega matches.
He's busy cleaning himself. Oh. And I think that's an excellent idea.
The second main event was Okada versus Naito. They're two biggest stars over there. And I have not watched all of Wrestle Kingdom yet, Joe, because remember how we were like, oh my God, WrestleMania is 5 hours long. Wrestle Kingdom was 6.5 hours long.
Wimp. I mean, oh, wow.
I haven't had 6.5 hours at home yet. So what I'm hoping is that I'm able to say no when nobody calls in sick and everything. And next Sunday, when I get off work at 3 o'clock, the podcast will be all mixed. I will just sit down and watch Wrestle Kingdom. If not, it's going to have to wait till my vacation. Comic-wise, old comics, I am reading the Man-Wolf series from the 70s. Joe, do you know who did the Man-Wolf?
My brain's shut off. I can't think.
Dave Kraft, D-A-K, and some very early work by George Perez.
Ooh.
Now, Man-Wolf was J. Jonah Jameson's son, who got this gem that implanted into him, and then when the moon would come up...
Was it the moonstone that Ulysses Bloodstone eventually...
Yes.
So it was kind of like, was that before Ulysses or after?
It's more complicated than that.
Oh, I love that stuff.
Because they already had a werewolf series. So what Kraft and Perez did was a kind of a science fiction alternate universe series where he would, it's just weird. It's just weird in 70s and George Perez doing the art. And it's just, it's batshit crazy. And they've never done a collection of it, which amazes me. But it's out there available in your back issue bins. And it was in Creatures on the Loose, and then it wrapped up in Marvel Premiere. And it's just batshit insane. I read the first issue of the Return of the Phoenix miniseries. And it's very interesting. It's very... It sets the stage for a lot of stuff, and I know it's going to lead to yet another new X-Men book, but I like the fact that it's kind of, you don't quite know what's happening. And, you know, we did have the Phoenix Force return, and it has shown up, and it's been places. But they're dropping some weird hints about Jean Grey and all this stuff. So it's only
buy
five
it,
issues.
Will kill her again, for God's sakes, buy it. She's been killed and resurrected more times. I don't know what I could do if she died again.
Actually, I hate to break it to you, Joe, but Professor X has died and come back more times than Jean Grey. Jean Grey has died and come back. She has died twice and come back once. But everybody thinks that she dies and comes back and dies and comes back and dies and comes back. Yeah, Professor X has died at least five times.
Yeah, well, he had it coming.
Yeah. And I don't even want to get into all the different villains who've died and come back. I mean, even Dr. Octopus was blown up by a nuclear bomb, and hey, he got better.
We need Scourge back. When he killed villains, they stayed dead.
Yeah, for the most part. Joe was talking about Mark Waid's Captain America. And I have read the second issue of Mark Waid's Captain America, and I've read what's coming up for the next story arc, the Man Out of Time, that will lead up to issue 700. And, you know, the rumor is that Mark Waid's just kind of doing this story till someone else takes over soon. Marvel, please listen to me. Don't. If you're gonna have somebody else come on to Captain America, give him a different Captain America book. Mark Waid should write Captain America all the time.
Yes.
Okay. And Chris Samnee should draw Captain America all the time. And that's all I have to say about that. And the last thing I am geeking on, Marvel kind of made an announcement that I have not seen anywhere in the comic press, which surprised me because I think this is one of Marvel's coolest ideas. Joe, have you ever heard of the podcast Serial?
No.
It is an NPR podcast, and it's... The way they do it is they take a news story and do like a 10 to 12 episodes really diving in to a news story. Marvel has announced that they're going to do something like it, except it's not going to be a news story. It's going to be a Wolverine story, fully scripted, called The Long Night. And they haven't released, you know, how many episodes or any of that, but they did say it's fully scripted with sound effects, and they've chosen all the actors, and I can't wait. For all the shit Marvel gets, their podcast is really well done and really gets you hyped about the new stuff, very fan interactive. I'm really looking forward to this one because it's taking, one of their most popular characters, and okay, well, let's try a podcast series with them. Let's do this. Let's try that. So I'm excited about it, and I hope that it succeeds well enough that they do a few more. Believe it or not, kids, you've listened to us blather on about funny books for about an hour and a half while we have been recording for almost 3.5 hours.
Well, yeah, we did have a 40 to 50-minute break while we had to, you know, reinvent the interwebs.
Well, there is that.
Yeah.
And as we say every week, the comic we like the least, we still like better than the comic that you like the most. Joe?
I'm putting my foot down, Strode.
Uh-oh.
For years, I've been telling you to hit my music, and the music you hit is nowhere near my music.
It's so, the one you chose.
I listened to it, and I didn't choose any of it.
Yes, you did. You're the one who said that we need to go with Funk is on a Roll. You were a big fan of the Funkadactyls.
You chose that all yourself in that wild weekend with way too many tequila shots, and that, you know, we dove the Mariana Trench, and boy, when they find what you left down there, oh, man.
I don't drink.
So what I've decided...
You've been cleaning, haven't you? You've been huffing Pine Sol fumes.
I have an idea. And as we go back all the way back to when we had our friends Dave and Steph Kofel on, and he allowed us to play some of his music as opposed to, you know, the so-called my music. So I'm throwing this out to all you people out there who are musically inclined. If you have some music you'd like us to promote here on this here podcast, send us an MP3 and we'll tack it on to the end of the show at the end of my music. For example, I have here in my hands... B.C. Blackmer, and their first album, Dead to the World. This is a heavy metal band that I have to mention is I know my brother-in-law, Tim Murray, is heavily involved in, and he's given me permission to use one of his songs as a premiere. And if you listen to it and you like it, drop me a quick line, and I will let you know how you can get a hold of Tim and get yourself your own copy of the CD or a download. I'm not sure how he's distributing this.
We'll even put that in the show notes.
So from their, this is the title track off their new album, Dead to the World. Name of the song, Dead to the World. Corey, hit my music.
Fucking dead.